I had the privilege of attending graduate school where poet Michael Ananiya was a professor. Ananiya looks a little bit like Nick Nolte to me. He's a big, shambling bear of a guy, very, very smart, with these deep-set eyes. Very intimidating, especially to me, you know, a 25-year-old writer. Here's this guy whose poetry was in the Norton Anthology. I admired him a great deal, so I signed up for his poetry workshop class, even though I'm not a poet. I've never really written good poetry. I thought I could learn something from this guy. So the first day of class, I head in and I sit down with all the other righteous and real poets, and I'm down at the end of the table, and in comes Ananiya, and he just stands there with those deep-set eyes piercing all of us one by one, like he's thinking. And then he says, "Oh, I can read your mind. Did you know that? I can read the mind of every single one of you here, and you're all thinking the same thing. And do you know what it is? You're thinking, I am the voice in the room. I am the rising star who will shoot heavenward and explode above your heads into a million colors, dazzling you all. And how lucky you are that one day you'll be able to say you sat in this workshop with me. It's me. I am the one. I am the poet. I am here. And the part of that that is so terrible is that you are all so wrong." Well, we digested that for a moment. And then he said, "And I'll tell you why you're wrong. You're wrong because you're thinking it. There's no such thing as the romantic poet. There's no such thing as the modernist." And he's right. Samuel Taylor Coleridge and William and Dorothy Wordsworth formed a circle of artists around themselves who shared an aesthetic, and they drove each other forward. And they went farther and became better because of the influence of each other. Modernism was gestated in a bookstore in Paris called Shakespeare and Company, where James Joyce, Gertrude Stein, and Ezra Pound, and many other lost generation voices connected and influenced each other. Ananiya went on to say, "Literature is a conversation, and if you want to join it, you have to find your tribe. Art speaks to art. Find your tribe. Don't come here to talk. Come here to listen. Read everything you can get your hands on from your fellow students. And don't read it in that self-serving way where you look for what is terrible to make yourself feel better. Look for what sets your heart on fire. Look for people who are writing about the things that interest you, and then make those people your dearest bosom friends. Because that is how you will get your ticket into the conversation." Ananiya was talking about forming bonds, forming a community. Whether or not your group ends up changing the face of literature, just being in your group is going to up your chances of success, he said. Not just success in terms of publication, but success in saying that essential thing you're trying to say. And we're all trying to say something. I mean, writers are all definitely egocentric people. We just are. First of all, we believe we have something to say. And secondly, we believe that you should sit down for 100,000 words and listen to it. If you want to be listened to, Ananiya was saying, learn how to be in that conversation. So then I went to my first fiction workshop, and I went to it with this impassioned speech of Michael Ananiya echoing in my brain still. And about 3 weeks in, we were reading everyone in the class in rotation. A short story came up that set my brain on fire. It was a weird short story. It was lunacy. It was set in a communist enclave in this big rambling house that could open on a hinge and show you every room at once, and you could see what all the people were doing. But on the thematic level, the story was engaging with everything that interested me, with everything that still interests me. Nature versus nurture, or in other words, who can we blame for all this crazy? Also, the idea of home, how you get there, how you leave it, what is home, the epic journey home. Chaos versus order. How do you take a chaotic world and assign a system to it, and we had very different ways of exploring this. She was all about math and science. I was all about faith. But we're looking at the same thing on parallel tracks, and sometimes that's even more interesting than when you're on the exact same path to the same destination. So after the workshop, when she got up and started walking out, I went and attached myself to her and started talking to her. Walked with her all the way to the bus stop. I lived on campus, but I got on the bus and went with her to the heart of Chicago to Boys Town and got off the bus and talked to her all the way to her apartment and then stood there making her talk to me in the lobby until she was forced to invite me up, where I got myself in really good with her dog. He really took to me, which helps. It's hard to not like someone when your dog has already approved them. Then a couple of weeks later, my first story went through the workshop, and she then became very interested in being my friend back. That's Lydia Netzer. She's still in my writers group. She's the author of Shine, Shine, Shine and How to Tell Toledo from the Night Sky. She's had a Times Notable book. She's been nominated for the LA Book Award. Even after I left graduate school, I didn't stop looking. I didn't forget Ananias talk. I met a woman online a few years later. This was still before I'd published anything. And she and I both liked narrative drive and the intricacies of plot. There was this slice of life thing happening in the 90s. I couldn't get into a literary magazine to save my life because all the stories were these sort of static thing where an old man tends a blade of monkey grass while regretting his failed relationship with his only son, or a woman lies in the bathtub and considers her wasted thighs and her relationship with food. And this woman and I, we were both like, I wish someone would come in there and start shooting or yelling or having a problem. And we couldn't get into any of the magazines, and we both liked the same thing. And not only that, but the internet's a written medium. I liked how she wrote. She had a way with words. She was funny and smart and engaged and doing wordplay. And that was Sarah Gruen, author of Water for Elephants and At the Water's Edge. And she's still in my writing group. She already had a Lydia. She had Karen Abbott, a narrative nonfiction writer. And Karen goes back through history and she explores the lives of iconic rebellious women. She's written about Gypsy Rose Lee and the Everly sisters, who ran the world's most famous brothel in the Levee District at the turn of the last century in Chicago. Her most recent book is Liar, Temptress, Soldier, Spy. It's about four female spies, two Confederate, two Union, who changed the course of American history during the late unpleasantness. She and I are both very interested in the female experience in really different ways. And so Sarah connected me to Karen, and I connected Karen to Lydia and Sarah, and we've become our own little group over the years. That's my writing group. Those are the people that I've been through the trenches with. We've sold our first books together. We've set bars. We make each other better writers. I'm not saying that the four of us are very busy changing the face of literature or anything. I'm just saying that's 20 years worth of war stories, and these are the people I look forward the most to reading and who are also my soft place to land. Art speaks to art, Ananias said. You gotta find your tribe. Speaking of Karen Abbott, she is coming to the ATL. She'll be at Margaret Mitchell House on Friday, September 17th at 7 p.m. to talk about Liar, Temptress, Soldier, Spy. This book weaves together the true life stories of four extraordinary women, a connected socialite, a farm girl who masquerades as a farm boy, a devoted abolitionist, and a predatory widow, who's probably my favorite. These four women acted as spies in the Civil War, two Union, two Confederate, and their individual actions changed the fates of the others among the four and the course of history. The LA Times says, not for nothing has Abbott been called the pioneer of sizzle history. It should be a fascinating talk. Abbott's bringing down a slideshow of spy paraphernalia that'll blow your mind. Hope to see you there. For WABE, this is Jocelyn Jackson.